Gangster Squad in color.
And welcome to the Flop House. I'm Dan McCoy.
I am Stuart Wellington.
And fiddling with my Stuart Wellington robot, I'm the Mad Doctor Elliot Kalin.
Elliot, I've been meaning to tell you to stop fiddling with your Stuart
Bleep
robot.
Bleep blorp, that feels good, boss.
I bought it to fiddle with.
You're gonna go blind.
Maybe he will, but not me.
All right.
My lenses are clouding up.
Yeah, exactly. See, it's his problem.
All right.
Stubot, so, I made you for pleasure, but not your own.
I am a God-fearing Christian robot.
Wait, what?
That means he'll let you put it in the butt.
Okay, oh yeah. Well, disgusting past.
His robot.
Dan, what are these people sadly listening to against their will?
Are they immediately pausing and then deleting?
What are they dragging to the recycling bin on their desktop?
This is a little podcast called
I'm
the
glad
Flop
they're recycling
House.
It, by the way.
What?
I'm glad they're recycling.
Yeah, it's
going to
turn into a can or something like that.
All these computer files, if we didn't recycle them.
They just pile up? Yeah. There's that big patch of computer files out in the ocean.
That's a myth.
This is a bad movie podcast, guys.
What's it called? The Flop House.
I said that.
You know what? Let me say. This is a podcast called The Flop House. It's about bad movies. Every episode, we watch a bad movie, and then we talk about it. Dan seems to be in some kind of semi-comatose hyper state, and Stuart's just kind of drunk a little bit. So yeah. I'll take the reins. Me,
oh,
Elliot
no.
Kalin. So today, Dan, what movie did we watch?
A movie called
Hat Detectives.
Should have been called Hat Detectives.
It's called Gangster Squad.
A squad of gangsters?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's really like...
No, wrong. It's a squad that fought gangsters. Dan, are you even listening to what we're saying?
No, he's saying that our characters are gangsters.
The gangsta, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a movie about... Is it
explain the movie.
The thin line between...
Love and hate.
Detectives and gangsters?
Not really, no, but...
About using gangster tactics?
Yeah,
gangsters.
When you stare at a monster, be careful because that monster could be you someday.
Yeah, when you stare at the gangster stares back. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so let's talk about what happens in the movie.
Okay,
huh?
Okay. So we watch this movie now. Elliot, this is the part of the podcast where Elliot talks about what the movie was actually about.
Thanks for introducing it.
Because you guys don't remember
it.
Now, everyone may remember this was a big release from a while ago. Star-studded. You got a lot of stars.
Yeah.
Sean Penn.
The sky was dark.
Josh Brolin. Ryan Gosling. Emma Stone, Robert Patrick, John Polito,
Michael Pena, Anthony Mackie,
huge stars. but it was a big star. Giovanni Ribisi, Nick Nolte, and I was before this movie came out, I was kind of hoping it would turn out to be really good. Directed by the guy who made Zombieland, which I like. I like a good old-fashioned gangster action movie. I like a lot of the cast members.
You like a good old-fashioned squad movie, too?
I love squad
Monster
movies.
Monster Squad.
Monster Squad, Squad Monsters, all those movies.
The Squad and the Whale.
Yeah, Squad. I didn't like that so much. It was depressing. Okay. It was kind of like a short story that they made into a movie.
Yeah.
Squad, which is about a squad that goes after squads.
Like Incident on Owl Creek Bridge.
Yeah, has nothing to do with squads.
It's a short story.
They didn't make it into a whole movie. They made it into a short film.
Okay, continue.
That aired as an episode of The Twilight Zone. So, the year is 1949.
Mm-hmm.
It's Los Angeles.
Hollywoodland.
L.A., the city of angles. Every building's got at least four angles. And
circles? No, thank you.
No, thanks. No rounds here. We like corners here in Los Angeles. And, or as we call it, Cornifornia. Now... I feel like that should be in something that's supposed to teach kids about geometry. Like, let's go to Los Angeles, Cornifornia.
Mayor Pythagoras.
Yeah. All right, well, let's save it for the Donald and Math Magic Land sequel you're penning.
It gets really dirty.
Weird.
They're trying to find the algorithm for ecstasy. Anyway, so the crime is on the rise as gangster Mickey Cohen, Sean Penn with like 3 pounds of latex slapped on his face for no reason, is trying to drive out the East Coast mob in the form of John Polito's character. And things
John Polito forever being driven out by other mob bosses.
he's never the big mob boss. Although for me, my favorite role of his is always the dry cleaning investment salesman who from The Man Who Wasn't There.
Right.
Oh, I love that. He goes, when he raises his eyebrow at Billy Bob Thornton, he goes, "Was that a pass you just made?" Could be.
He looks like a guy.
You are way out of line, mister. I'm sorry. Way out of line.
He looks like the type of guy I would ask hoagie advice from. Like where to get a really good hoagie.
Sure.
I thought you were saying you'd ask Hoagie Carmichael for advice about what to get John Polito for his birthday.
I do that too, yeah.
Probably an ascot is what Hoagie Carmichael would say.
Yeah, or a piano or a CD of Hoagie Carmichael songs.
Everyone loves him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got really sad.
I did. Well, he's dead, so made me sad. Anyway, so in order
to welcome home, Hoagie Carmichael. Sorry, I just needed to say that.
A very different movie.
Doesn't mean anything. Not connected.
So, luckily, there's some tough guys in town, such as Detective Sergeant John O'Mara, Josh Brolin. He's a detective in the LAPD.
Yep.
And we are introduced to him as he saves a young girl from being forced into prostitution by a bunch of kind of rat-faced, fratish bad guys. And he busts his way into
this frat party.
He busts his way into one of Mickey Cohen's fuzz castles in order to save this girl.
Been shut up in a Murphy bed.
And now who is attacked and then shut into a Murphy bed. And Josh Brolin instantly, he tells us three things. One, he's a tough guy who's not afraid to take on Mickey Cohen, even though the rest of the cops are. Two, he wears a hat, much like every other character in this movie, including at one point a dog. And three, he's got a penchant for hurting people's hands.
Yeah.
In that he's fighting two guys in an elevator, and he like sticks one guy's gun hand out the elevator side so that when they go to the next floor, his hand is, I assume, just swiped right off.
And possibly the high point of the film.
Oh, possibly.
Yeah, I like the idea that standing with his hand out, it just chops his hand off like it's like a blade.
Just shears right off.
Instead of like just knocking his hand or...
The only way the scene could have been better is if he raised up his stump and two spurts of blood came out. Ah! Anyway, so that impresses his boss, Nick Nolte, who's the chief of police, who says, look, I know you have this like guerrilla warfare training from World War II. I want you to take on a new and form a new squad, not on the books, totally underground, unofficial, that
and
will
I'm not going to pay you anything.
That will just strike back at Mickey Cohen's money making institutions and kill his guys and stuff like that. And
that sounds pretty legal, right?
It's totally not, but they are the good guys. And so Josh Brolin goes home to his pregnant wife, who says, "I don't want you to do this."
They made us believe that Mickey Cohen's a super bad guy, though. At this point, right?
Yeah, he is the gangster of all gangsters. He even kills other gangsters.
Yeah, we saw him kill a gangster and beat up
like
a punching bag, right?
Yeah, he's a gangster, only goes after other gangsters. But the movie opens with him killing a guy by chaining his. By drawing and quartering with him with two cars.
And with a classic Flophouse element with a voiceover.
opens with a voiceover, that's true.
He pulls them apart between two cars and then coyotes beast
him. And then some wild animals just come and eat him. And it's like, thanks, boss. I wish they had lived in like talking sidekicks like the eels in Little Mermaid or like Scar's hyena sidekicks in The Lion King. Like that would have been great.
Or if there's a newspaper headline later on like, coyote population starving.
No, coyote population on the rise. Fat coyotes seen in town. It's worried they have a taste for human flesh. Look, we got to get to the bottom of this fat coyote mystery.
Sure. They're spreading their money around.
Think about
it. Not catching any of the roadrunners.
Think about how much this... They don't even care about roadrunners anymore. The roadrunner population is way too big.
It's
so hard
to catch.
Yeah. Here's the movie I wanted it to be.
The gangsters feeding the coyotes
bisected
on gangsters.
Here's
like
what
they
I want.
Their ability to
gangster
hunt
meat is delicious.
Here's the movie I wish we had watched. It's called. It's called Animal Squad, and it's about a pest control guy who notices there's a lot of fat coyotes around, and the roadrunner population is not being kept in check. So the coyotes must be eating something else. Finds out they're eating gangsters, decides to take on Mickey Cohen because he's thrown off the natural order of coyotes going after roadrunners.
Sure, in the sequel, he's like, these mongooses are getting fat and lazy, and there's cobras everywhere.
Exactly. Turns out a gangster is feeding things to mongoose. Anyway, it's called Animal Squad. $700,000. The story can be yours. So he puts, so overnight, his wife, who's a tough cookie herself, so decides, no, he's got to do it. And she helps him put together his squad. She says, don't go after the young, high achieving detectives, because those are the guys Mickey Cohen's going to put on his payroll, because they're bound to rise to the ranks. Go after the outcasts and the underdogs.
Yeah, so, yeah, we've had lovable losers.
This is a movie that has
some slobs to take on the snobby gangsters.
Yeah, in the summer camp prank off that is Gangster Squad.
Prankster Squad.
Prankster Squad would have been much better. Like, they sneak into Mickey Cohen's house and replace all his clothes with smaller clothes, so he thinks he's growing, and then they replace those with bigger clothes, so he thinks he's shrinking. They take apart a car, put it together inside of his office. Well, how am I supposed to get this out of here?
Prankster Squad.
Prankster Squad.
They leave an old dead carp in his locker.
Yeah, that's going to smell up the joint. They shrimp him. Oh, that's the worst.
So up until this point, though, this has been a pretty exciting opening for a movie.
It's been a pretty fast-moving movie with a lot of action, and ironically,
time to hit the brakes.
It starts to bog down when he puts the Gangster Squad together. So he hires this is the best part of the movie. So one of them is a black policeman played by Anthony Mackie, and Anthony Mackie is introduced to us by, we're in, I guess, the Los Angeles equivalent of a Harlem, you know, jazz joint. Mm-hmm. It's a black hangout. And there's a drug dealer who's about to do something, and then suddenly a knife flies out of nowhere and pins his hand to the wall. And by which I mean a knife went right through his hand. And Anthony Mackie steps out. He's a master of the throwing blade, I guess. And he's like, not going to have any of that in my part of town. Josh Brolin steps out of nowhere. I want to offer you a place on the Gangster Squad. I like your moves. So was Josh Brolin just following him, waiting for him to prove himself? Or was he hanging around that joint waiting for someone to hurt a hand? You know, like, yeah. I want you on the Hamster Squad.
He just appears whenever justice is served.
Yeah, so he's like the Phantom Stranger or something?
Yeah, for the past hour he'd been telling that drug dealer to keep making that motion with his hand. It's like, just keep doing it. Eventually, I'll cover any medical damage.
Look, you'll be on my insurance. I just need to find someone who will hurt your hand.
Works that way.
I need someone who's going to throw a knife at your hand, hit it with a blow dart, chop it off with an axe, hit it with one of those bowling pin clubs people used to work out with back now, because it's the past. Any of that stuff.
Or maybe like a yo-yo that's a buzzsaw.
Yep.
Yep, that's... Anyway, he tells him, let's strike at the source of the drugs. Mickey Cohen, they get a wiretapper nerdy guy, played by Giovanni Ribisi, and they get...
So wait, he couldn't play like the tough guy knife thrower? He had to be the nerd?
No, he's the nerdy guy.
That's too bad.
With a mustache, and the character Dan liked the most.
And the family.
He's got a family.
He's doing it for his boy. He's the only other member of the squad of the family, and he's doing it for his boy's future, while they watch a rocket fly into the sky. But they also get an old West gunslinger, played by T-1000 himself, character. Robert Patrick, and he has a young Mexican sidekick who nobody likes on the regular force because they're racist, but Gangster Squad will take him in once he follows them and basically forces himself on them. Now, Josh Brolin wants Ryan Gosling to join. Ryan Gosling plays the part of Jerry Wooters,
a name that seems to have
come out of a Nexus comic book, but from the planet Ilum. But Jerry Wooters is a ladies' man who strikes up a relationship with Emma Stone, who is Mickey Cohen's girlfriend.
And a shoeshine boy.
And he doesn't have a relationship with the shoeshine boy. He's just friendly with the shoeshine boy.
I mean, they're friends.
Boy.
Like, a relationship doesn't necessarily mean sexual.
Yeah, and there's a shoeshine boy he runs past every time he goes to see Emma Stone at Slappy Maxie's, a real-life nightclub.
Slapsy
Maxie's.
A real-life nightclub. And he has a friend named Jack who keeps telling him, don't get involved with this girl. Mickey Cohen's going to kill you. But anyway... They have the Gangster Squad decides to go.
Slapsy Maxie sounds like the type of bar that like Lila Cheney's band would play in an X-Men comic.
Yeah, before what were those characters that from Excalibur that Chris Claremont became obsessed with, like Gatecrashers or something like that? TechNet.
Yeah,
there's some stupid group of characters that show up a lot. Anyway, whatever. X-Men comics. What are you gonna do? So the Gangster Squad, which at this point. I decided to name the hat-headed hand herders because they all wear hats and they all hurt hands.
They all wear head hats.
They're head hats, not like butt hats or foot hats, which would be bats or fats.
Although there is a dog hat in the movie.
Yeah, that's a dat, which stands for a dog head hat.
You don't put it on a dog's butt. That would be crazy.
And hilarious.
Got a movie with
That would be, I guess, only a John Waters movie would do something so tasteless. I mean,
that's comedies about subverting expectations.
Yeah, it's like, one, that's two subversions. You don't expect a dog to wear a hat unless it's like...
No, of course not. Where's he going to buy that hat?
Exactly. Yeah, and you totally don't expect him to wear it on his butt. That's where his poop comes from.
Yeah, the salesman will explicitly explain that's a head hat.
The salesman who's fitting the dog for a hat.
I think a hat salesman knows, though, that a hat is, as you said, a contraction for head hat.
I hope it's like the first thing they teach them.
Is just redundant at that point.
No, but he would tell the customer that.
Oh, okay.
The customer would be like...
maybe they're from another land.
Yeah, where they don't wear...
like Holland? I don't
know. Well, because in Holland, hat means... Holland accessory towards the sun because it's the top of your head.
So, wait.
It's the part of your body that points towards the sun, but it's an accessory that goes on that in Holland.
Okay.
So the Holland word for hat, the Dutch word for head is hat. It just stands for something different.
Okay. It doesn't mean anything to do with your head.
Yeah.
No. And if hats in Holland, of course, is Holland accessory towards the sun, suckers.
It's weird that they use another country, another language's term for their nation than Holland. Yeah.
Look, it's weird, but that's what they do there in Holland.
It makes sense.
Yeah. That's and I mean, when...
But they're weird. What with their windmills?
Oh, no. Dan is alienating our fan base.
Look, like, you're talking about a country that... A country that...
Shoes.
You're talking about a country that named itself after the rock duo Holland Oats. So they're a weird country.
Yeah.
The Dutch supergroup Holland Oats. Or, alternately, the Dutch brand of oats, Holland Oats. So, Gangster Squad. The Gangster Squad decides to hold up one of Mickey Cohen's casinos in Burbank, but there are some cops at the casino thing, and the Gangster Squad looks like criminals because they've got bandanas on. They're trying to rob the place. There's a shootout. They're
shooting indiscriminately at the crowds.
Yep. There's a shootout. And
one guy's got an axe. I don't know what's going on there.
Brolin and Mackie are taken in. They're thrown in jail. But luckily for them, but not so lucky for a certain shoeshine boy, it's at that point that Mickey Cohen's men kill John Polito and in the crossfire kill the shoeshine boy. Jerry Wooters, our old friend Ryan Gosling, sees the whole thing and decides now he'll join the gangster squad.
No! Who will make my shoes shiny?
My shoes are so dirty. They're not shining. And he says to somebody, I assume, in his head, well, he's shining shoes in heaven now. Even though you're in heaven, you shouldn't have to shine shoes anymore.
Yeah.
Did you?
Well, there's a caste system up there.
Caste system?
Caste? I don't know, man.
It's a caste system.
Caste.
Because everyone wears casts because their arms are broken from all the shoes they've been shining. All
right.
Anyway, he decides, fine.
You can't shine a cast. That's crazy. You sign the cast.
He'll that's your public service note. Stuart Wellington saying, kids, sign it, don't shine it. A message about casts brought to you by the American Cast Council.
the ACC. Sign
it, don't shine it.
They spend all day coming up with catchphrases. What does the American Cast Council do?
They just raise public awareness of how to treat someone who has a cast.
Come up with new ways to itch underneath it.
Yeah, that's part of it. How can we make this itchier and dirtier?
How do we keep this less smelly? Stick herbs in your cast.
If you fill your cast with thyme and rosemary,
sure,
it won't smell so bad. Also, maybe don't break your leg next time.
Insert a layer of moss to wick away the sweat.
And then once you get your cast off, you can make a delicious stew out of it.
Put maggots in to eat away the dead flesh. There is no dead flesh. I just broke my leg. Oh, get those maggots out of there. Just open the cast and your leg is a skeleton. Maybe they're piranhas. I don't know. Anyway, so Ryan Gosling decides, okay, I'm a gangster squatty now. Puts on his hat, decides to hurt some hands. He goes to the jail and pretends to be Mickey Cohen's guy coming to pick up his targets. But uh-oh, the real guys show up. There's a shootout.
And basically, just like the director, the guys at the jail let him do whatever he wants.
Yes, yeah. Ouch. Ryan Gosling is seems to be in a different movie from everyone else. Everyone else is playing kind of like quick-talking 40s characters, and he is his regular kind of slow
things
burn.
Move a little slower in Ryan Gosling's movie.
Here around Gosling, we like to take our time with line readings. It's like Schneider, or that's his name? Who's the guy who directed it?
Fleischer.
I knew it was a Jewish name. Fleischer was directing everybody else, and then Nicholas Winding Refn was directing. Like, Ryan Gosling's like, I'm bringing in my guy. And Refn's like, okay, just stare into the space for a little bit. Okay, now talk real slow. Anyway, Mutter. He saves them, and they decide they put a bug in Mickey Cohen's house. And with that information, they
like a firefly,
no, like a listening device.
Okay,
no, it's not. They put a DVD, a box, DVD box of Firefly in his house, and he's so busy watching it because yeah. and asking and demanding they renew it for another season.
Sure,
that
somebody do a Kickstarter.
That he shuts down his gambling organization, but they find that he has this big plan. He's put together this telegraph wire system. He's going to control all the gambling and booking and bookie stuff in on the West Coast. And as Stuart said, we're watching it, they make it sound like he's a supervillain with like a super weapon that they need to stop it by a certain time or else he'll be unstoppable.
Yeah, it'll be an unstoppable bookie operation. Yeah. Basically, Josh Brolin says that. Like, he does, after yeah. a certain point, like, this bookmaking operation is going to be impossible to stop.
It's amazing how many times in the movie...
enough times to kill it.
How many times in the movie we predicted the lines they were going to say. There's one part where they're just in a police station and a guy walked in and I went, hey, boys, and then he said that.
Yeah.
And later on, they're toasting their success yeah. as the gangster squad, and I was like, yeah, to gangster squad. And then Ryan Gosling says, to gangster squad, because that's what they go on a rampage against Mickey Cohen's stuff, and yeah. the newspapers refer to them as the gangster squad. They think they're vigilantes of some kind.
I want to point out Nick Nolte tells them don't just shoot Mickey Cohen. Like, if you do that, other gangsters are just going to come in to fill the void. I want you to destroy his organization
so that nobody can have it again,
which is I guess an explanation that makes sense, but more so it's just an explanation to keep the movie running longer.
Yeah, because if they killed Mickey Cohen, the movie would be over.
Yeah.
And they're not an assassination squad, Dan. They're a gangster squad.
Oh, they sure shoot the fuck out of a bunch of people, though.
They kill a lot of people. There's a couple different action sequences. They're not bad. There's a good car chase where the bad guys are throwing a bunch of potato mashers
pretty,
at them.
You're being pretty charitable with the term good.
It's not that good, but... I have to. The first,
as you said, all the action sequences make a lot of use of digital video.
Yeah, so they're very blurry. Which it's the same. If you guys saw the movie Public Enemies, mm-hmm. which was another modern gangster movie, which I think might have all been shot on digital video, and it was super yeah. blurry. And like Captain America, the action sequences were very clearly DV and were really blurry. Like, I don't know why they think digital video is not blurrier than film. You know.
I mean, I feel like...
And I could be getting this... Maybe it's all shot on like DV.
Most
things, it's just
maybe just somebody's like smearing stuff on their glasses there for
that
us.
That could be it. That could be it. We spent a good amount of the movie talking about how good Raiders of the Lost Ark is.
Yeah. Oh, boy. If you want to see good action, the good punch-em-ups.
Yeah, anyway, so there's a lot of back and forth with the gangsters. The gangster squad, this secret underground organization that nobody can know about, spends a lot of time hanging out in their spare time together. They have a barbecue at Brolin's house mm-hmm. that the chief of police stops by. They're yeah. drinking together in bars, talking loudly about how they're the gangster squad.
They get those gangster squad t-shirts that they wear around.
Yeah, yeah.
Nick Foley. Nick Foley. yeah. Nick
yeah,
Nolte.
They hire Mick Foley, Mankind, and he's just like, yeah, I'm gangster squad, Mick Foley.
Nick Nolte shows up and does his best Mr. Toad impression.
Yeah, because he's Nick Nolte seems to have somehow cloned himself and then eaten that Nick Nolte, so he's got twice the Nick Nolte in him.
Sure, yeah.
He's a big guy.
He's preparing for that the old mentor role for the upcoming Battletoads live action movie.
Please don't tease me with the idea of a live action Battletoads movie. If it's not happening, I don't want to hear it. There's been such an advance in Frogman technology since Hell Comes to Frogtown. But Mickey Cohen learns about that these guys are cops. He learns that there's a bug on him, and by feeding them, what
he goes
get away! Is it biting me? It's a piece of lint, sir.
First off,
it's Mickey Cohen's one weakness, a bug.
One particular bug.
He would say it a lot more like Big Boy Caprice yeah. than what you guys are doing.
Sean Penn seems to think that he's playing Al Pacino in Dick Tracy, which is nuts. It's
which
like,
is nuts, but also not that far from what this movie is.
This movie, it's one of these movies that is a little too over the top to be taken seriously, but it's not over the top enough to be really fun. So like, if they were going to go the Sean Penn route and just have everyone be over the top bonkers with makeup on their face, that would be fun. Or if they dialed it back and made it more like L.A. Confidential, that would be fun. But instead, it's in this weird limbo where you can't take it seriously because Sean Penn has a child's idea of makeup on his head. And you can't take it, but it's not goofy enough because the movie acts like we're supposed to give a shit about these characters, you know?
Yeah, it's caught in the limbo between L.A. Confidential and Dick Tracy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an unbaptized baby. It's just caught in limbo it's after like it dies.
Dick Confidential, right?
Well, I was going to say L.A. Tracy, but...
L.A. Tracy sounds great,
sounds
too.
Sounds like Dan has his magazine title, Dick Confidential. True stories about penises.
The detective pulled his pants down.
Here's the badge I need.
The magazine's like, can we keep this between you and me? And then shows you a picture of a dick.
There's a bunch of scenes in the movie where they show people holding copies of True Detective magazine. It just made me wish I was watching that. Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is, movie, if you're going to be bad, don't put in a reference to a TV show that comes out a year after the movie does.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they get bad. Mickey Cohen feeds them false information that there's going to be a big drug operation in Chinatown. The gangster squad goes there, but it's totally a trap.
Gangster squad, assemble.
Gangster squad, assemble. Brolin. Mexican guy. Old gunslinger. Wooters. But they go, and it's a trap, and Mickey Cohen's bodyguard, the real-life Johnny Stompanato, and Mickey Cohen's a real-life person, too. This is also one of those movies that's kind of loosely enough based on facts that they use people's real names, but then all the heroes are made-up characters, you know.
You mean Stabby Guy didn't exist?
Which one was Stabby Guy?
You know,
yeah, the guy who... Yeah,
oh, Anthony Mackie? No.
Yeah, if that movie had been made 20 years ago, it'd be Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And Ryan Gosling part would have been played by child Ryan Gosling as kid detective. So it's a trap. They blow up a truck. Nobody gets hurt, but at the same time, they go over to, they find out where Giovanni Ribisi is listening in on Mickey Cohen's talking, and he gets strangled. And there's a part where Mickey Cohen is talking directly into the microphone, talking about how a cop eavesdropped on him, and then suddenly the guy shows up and strangles Giovanni Ribisi.
They had to have planned that shit, dude.
Did he say, like, I'm going to give a monologue. Wait till I say the part about eavesdropping.
It's going to be great. He's going to be on the edge of his seat.
I want to have that moment where he goes, like, wait, is that me? And then you kill him. And the one thing I liked about that scene was there's an open furnace behind the bad guy, and while he's choking Giovanni Ribisi, he's stepping backwards. His coat catches on fire, and instead of him being like, what? And that saving Ribisi, he finishes strangling him and then calmly takes off his coat and stomps it out and then leaves. And it's like, this is a tough dude. He is not fazed by being on fire.
This
is the character the movie should be about. Not afraid of fire, gangster guy.
Now I'm imagining...
That's the title, by the way.
Oh, I don't know if that's going to sell.
Not Afraid of Fire Gangster Guy, rated R.
Now I'm imagining a comedy version of that scene.
Fireproof.
Where Sean Penn...
slips on a banana peel?
Well, no, Sean Penn, like, gives, like, the cue, like policeman listening in on me, but tough guy is, like, being distracted by, like, there's a skunk right next to him. He's like, I can't move, the skunk's going to spray me.
I'm going to smell all bad.
And Sean Penn keeps going... The cop who is listening in on me. And Giovanni Ribisi is like, is he talking about
the
me?
Cop who bugged me and was listening on me at the time.
Who's
I'm getting
going
this all
to be
down.
Strangled in a moment.
What are the odds that another cop was eavesdropping on him at some point? Too bad for that guy who was strangled.
Yeah.
It's too bad you weren't involved in the making of the movie Mafia with
Jane Austen's Mafia, yeah. Starring Jay Moore and Christina Applegate. Yeah. That movie has one joke in it I really like a lot, which is that Christina Applegate leaves for a long time, and then she comes back, and Jay Moore goes, you never even visited our son. And Christina Applegate goes, we have a son? Somehow didn't know she gave birth to a child. Also, there's a part where I think it's Jay Moore's mistress is throwing vases at him, and because she's so mad, and she picks up a dog and throws it, and it shatters against the wall. So there's two good jokes in that. Okay. Now, the scene where Lloyd Bridges is being shot and the bullets shake his body so that he does the Macarena is not a good joke. And if you're wondering why I remember Jane Austen's Mafia, a movie I saw once in the theaters when it came out almost 20 years ago, this well, I have no idea. That's how my brain works. It works stupidly. Of course I did.
Did you lose a bet?
No, I loved like spoof parody Abrams Zucker style
movies.
Sure,
and you had to take a girl on a date to a movie. I mean, what are you going to do? Just take her to Fazoli's?
Yeah, come on. What are we just going to go to Makeout Hill for the sub race? I don't think so.
No, you got to give her some laughs first so yeah. You can warm her up.
I thought I would scare her with laughter and then she'd cuddle close to me. She was afraid of laughter. Weird girl. Anyway, so What was I talking about?
I don't know.
Anyway, I'm lucky that those like Meet the Spartans date movie type movies came out when I was old enough to recognize shitty movies. Because if those had come out when I was 14, I'd be like, this is a comedy. I have to see it, you know.
Yeah. Unlike, I don't know, Ski Patrol, which I thought was the funniest movie in the entire world. And I was wondering why I only saw it on video and not in the movie theater.
I mean, it already come out, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably, but I can't imagine Fort Wayne, Indiana, the theater showed fucking Ski Patrol.
I mean, they probably showed that before they showed, like, I don't know, Kiss of the Spider Woman.
No, I totally remember my parents going to see Kiss of the Spider Woman one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
then coming back going, needed more kissing.
I know. Yeah, I was staying at I had a babysitter that night, and I was like, I wonder what this movie's about.
Kind of half woman, half spider.
That's what I was
hoping. Kills you with kisses.
It sounded great until...
It's like I have a memory of my parents, me getting a babysitter so my parents could go see Crimes and Misdemeanors, and I only knew the character Misdemeanor from the show Cops, the cartoon. So I was like, this sounds like a movie I should see. Come on. It's got this character Misdemeanor from a show I watch. But no, it was a Woody Allen tale about morality.
I also Dan. Saw movies when I was a child.
Well, I remember about, a time my parents.
This is about you getting a babysitter while your parents saw a movie.
My parents went to a movie one time, and after the movie, my mother brought up the idea that my parents had to decide which movie they were going to see, whether they were going to see the movie with like the beautiful woman for my dad, or the movie with the hot guy for my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure the movie with the girl was Die Hard for my dad, which was kind of weird. I guess that's like a, you know, his wife. And I think the movie for my mom was a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That was the hunky guy?
Yeah, I guess Arnold was the hunky guy for my mom.
So was it like Hercules in New York?
It's, as I've gotten older, that's kind of rocked. That's kind of shaken my faith in both my mom and my dad.
This reminded me of the time my dad organized a bunch of his friends to go see Godfather 3 because he was so excited about it and just came home destroyed. He was so disappointed. Anyway, Gangster Squad, right? So so Emma Stone decides she's going to leave Mickey Cohen. Now she realizes he's a violent gangster.
Yeah, he's having a fit. He's breaking shit.
Ryan Gosling's friend takes her in, but Mickey Cohen tracks them down. Ryan Gosling's friend bravely defends her, and he is murdered. And Emma Stone sees the whole thing. She tells Ryan Gosling, you know what? I will testify as a witness that Mickey Cohen killed this guy. They get a warrant. The gangster squad, after being fired, is back on the job. Yeah. They go to the Park Plaza Hotel where Mickey Cohen has holed up with his men. And everyone's like, it's a fortress. You're never going to get in. But Mickey Cohen has like 8 guys.
Yeah.
They're killed almost instantly by the gangster squad. There's a shootout. There's some more shooting. It's really anticlimactic. And then Mickey Cohen tries to escape in his car, crashes into a fountain.
Basically, it's a fortress. But all the bad guys get out of the fortress so you can shoot them.
Yeah, the bad guys do a lot of standing out in the open and firing over the good guys' heads while the good guys kill them.
If you're going to be carrying a Tommy gun, you want to just fucking spray that shit all over the place.
But spray it like at the level of the thing you're trying to hit. You can't just fire wildly.
You don't want to like make them duck their heads by spraying like, right
I'm
over
I'm spraying
it.
So many bullets, the odds are mathematically that one of them will hit the guy that I'm looking for.
I'm trying to do a really sweet ricochet kill.
Yeah, I want to get the bank shot points. So anyway, there's a bunch of shooting, and Mickey Cohen tries to escape. He doesn't. Josh Brolin throws his gun away, and they have a fist fight. And at some point, he gets the upper hand, but we weren't really paying attention.
We were talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Mickey Cohen gets beat up and humiliated in front of this spontaneously assembling crowd of cops and gangsters, who I guess were probably drawn to the area after the reports of an enormous gunfight that killed several people. Robert Patrick, the old gunfighter, gets shot and dies, unfortunately. And
wait, he died? They didn't show him.
They don't show him dying, but you
anything.
Assume that he's dead.
Really?
I mean, you never see him again.
Yeah,
show me the body.
Yeah, I want to see fucking grave dirt being thrown over a fucking pine box.
And then
bring me his mustache.
And then lightning hits the gravestone, and his fist comes out, clutching a gun.
That sounds awesome. Okay.
Which is the way that League of Extraordinary Gentlemen the movie should have ended. But anyway, besides the point, Mickey Cohen goes to jail. And everybody's happy, except the people who died. Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling are still together. Josh Brolin...
And they've adopted Mickey Cohen's dog.
Yeah, and put a hat on it.
And they're immortal now. They live forever. And they,
you don't, yeah,
they appear
never
in
grow
crazy,
old.
Stupid love.
Yeah, as the same characters.
Same characters.
That's cute. I guess they forgot about each other, like fucking C-3PO.
Yeah, well, it's
like
that
they got Wolverine.
Memory Wipe? Or whatever. They forget about it. The immortals forget about each other.
Oh, yeah, that was really stupid. And Josh Brolin quits the force to spend more time with his wife and his baby and tosses his badge into the ocean.
Tosses his baby.
Because why would you want to keep
it? That's a big baby, dude. That will clog that, the ocean.
Is there a drain? We've got to get this baby out. The currents won't move.
Is that why there's so much water in the ocean? Is the drain got clogged?
The drain got clogged by a baby. By some fat baby. There's a scene
where... Why is there so much water in this ocean?
When the gangsters learn of the gangster squad's identities, they shoot up Josh Brolin's house, and his pregnant wife, in the night, gives birth to the baby, and he finds her in the bathtub, bloody from the delivering the baby. And this baby is huge.
That's why she's so bloody, dude.
It is a huge... It's like she gave birth to a little man. And the baby's a girl, because she's wearing a dress later.
Brolin's like a big ox of a guy. I mean, you know.
Oh, you're saying that...
It works that way.
You're saying he came to her in the form of an ox like Zeus and Europa.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Anyway, so Gangster Squad
ends... Do you
think
Europa was like... Why couldn't he have come in a form of a golden shower or as a swan?
Yeah, one of the easier.
Why do you have to be a fucking... Yeah.
Ugh.
A nice, relaxing shower that leaves you impregnated by the gods.
And it's gold. It's worth a ton of money. It's super classy, like champagne and balloons.
Yeah, there's just molten gold raining down on you from the sky. It hurts a lot. Congealing into dinosaur poop, like in was it Stolen?
Yeah.
Yes. Gold turns into dinosaur poop in that movie we watched one time.
Yep. So that's Gangster Squad. It ends on a happy note, and L.A. is free
for the characters.
L.A. is free from crime forever.
Yeah. And good thing that the L.A. Police Department was never corrupt again.
Never, ever.
Jeez. I feel like Gangster this movie had a lot of plot without much happening.
So
and,
I mean, the movie looked okay.
The production design in the movie was really good. Like, it was a good... The costumes were good. The sets were good. The cars were good. Everyone looked good except for Sean Penn, because he looked like he did his own makeup at a Silly Putty in front of a mirror like an old British thespian. But there was just, like, for a movie that should have had a really intricate plot, like, there should have been twists and turns. We should have gotten to know how Mickey Cohen's empire operated. Or it should have been like a dumb, like, just shoot 'em up, but at least the scenes are connected to one another in a way. It was neither of those, you know. It wanted to be two different types of movies. It wanted to be a stupid action movie and some kind of historical drama. And it fails pretty much on both counts.
Yeah, let's just, I mean, like, we should do final judgments, whether this is a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of like. I'm going to say, like... I've talked less than normal this podcast. Part of that's just
because you okay? You seem like you took a lot of codeine. Before
I'm very tired. I'm exhausted today, but also there's just not. I don't have a lot of strong feelings about this movie. Like
this is a real bland movie in a lot of ways.
I liked a lot of the action sequences. If the whole movie was amped up like some of those action,
the whole movie
were,
involved a car driving around throwing grenades out the back of it,
mm-hmm, and people's hands being cut off by elevators.
Yeah, well, those are the good parts.
Then yeah, but otherwise, I think this was a bad movie. Stu.
Now, Dan. Oh wait. Let's do final judgments. Then I want to ask you about.
I'm gonna say it's a bad movie, but. There's moments where it's close enough to a good bad movie that you might enjoy it if that's what you're looking for.
I would say it's a good bad movie. It's not good bad in that, like, let's watch it and have a lot of fun making fun
of
it. But
of
like,
yucks, yeah.
If it was on TV on like a Sunday afternoon and you had nothing to do and you watched it, you'd be like, all right, that was Gangster Squad. Mm-hmm. Like,
I'm 2 hours closer to death now.
there are better things to watch. Like, go watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. But
listen to a couple of great podcasts. Who knows?
Yeah, but like, if you're on a plane. You don't want to, you saw the other movies. You don't have a book with you. You know what? Watch Gangster Squad.
Yeah,
they're
showing an old movie on a plane for some reason nowadays.
What were we going to ask?
They do show movies from within the past couple of years.
Well,
oh,
now
you
can watch classics, depending on what airline.
Yeah, classics like Gangster Squad. So, Dan, you don't like it in movies when people get hurt in the knee because of your knee injury. Do you think it's insensitive that you're like, yeah, more hand injuries, please? When there's probably some poor dude who tore his hand ACL, and now he's really hurt, and he doesn't like it when people get their hands hurt in movies. Well, are you a handicrit?
No. I mean, like, scholars of Flophouse mythology know that I have hooks for hands. And so I just want more people to join me in my brotherhood of hooking around.
Looking so around.
The happy hooker, they call me.
No, I don't.
Frankenhooker. You know, after you're dead and you get reanimated.
Yeah. That's
by
yeah.
a bolt of lightning, you're in a grave, you stick a gun out.
Yeah,
you're a real Hollywood chainsaw hooker.
I'm a real.
You want to encourage people.
You're a real hook.
You want
a movie starring Dustin Hoffman about hookers.
You make it sound like it's a command in the title.
Hook. You work in the streets, Dustin Hoffman, but I'm an Academy Award winning actor in my 70s. Now you work for me. I'm turning you out. Your name's
wear the Tootsie outfit.
Your name's Charisse Starlight. Put on the Tootsie dress. Get out to Hollywood Boulevard.
So you want to encourage our listeners to lose their hands in some kind of horrible accident.
Yeah. Yep. You can quote me on that.
Sure. Like, so if they see a fan and they're fighting that urge to stick their hand in that
just
fan.
Just stick it in because yeah, Dan wants you to have it. A hook for a hand.
Feel the rhythm of the night.
So let's just move on to letters while we still have time.
Sure.
This first one's titled USO Tour.
First letter. Oh, it's the Jesus. First letter, not the worst letter. It's the best letter.
I mean, we
still letter.
Have time. I think it's
we
okay.
We don't know yet. We haven't read the letters. Could go either way. So what do you say?
Okay,
let's start that first letter today. No further ado, this letter's for you. First letter of the night. Watch out, doesn't bite. It's the first letter, so let's get it started. It's the first letter. Oh, open-hearted. First letter for Stuart and Dan and me.
Is he just warming up or
this is the first letter. Don't you see? It's the first letter of the night for us, so let's get going chattier. With the first letter tonight.
All right, so
and here it comes, that first letter here. Oh. Dan's gonna read it right into your ear.
And he's your boss
the first
now.
Letter
he
started,
really
and you can't stop me from singing about it, singing out loud. It's the first letter
when
for
he has
tonight.
Sung in a meeting at work. And one of the fellow writers looks over to me, who listens to the podcast, looks over at me and says, can you do something about this? Isn't that your...
They haven't listened to the podcast.
It's not
one,
even on the podcast. Can
I can't
you
do it on
me?
The podcast. Number two, this is not my jurisdiction.
My songs are like sure. a runaway train, unstoppable.
Yeah. So...
Soul Asylum.
Again, you wouldn't remember this because there was a lengthy letter in between.
Here's
this,
a reminder no. of the subject for the first
the
letter.
The subject was USO Tour.
The subject was roses.
Oh, yep. USO tour. That's probably about
dear
you or me.
Flophouse podcast. While I was looking, while I was looking at the Facebook photos of the Daily Show USO tour, my daughter wandered by. Upon seeing the photo of Elliot in a protective suit being attacked by a dog, she asked, "Why is that dog attacking her?"
Oh, come on!
I corrected her, saying, "That's a guy." To which she replied, "Oh well, my mistake."
Oh, okay.
My question to you is, was getting attacked by dogs the most macho masculine thing you've ever done? And if not, what would you say was the most macho thing you've ever done? Keep up the good work, and sorry for the 9-year-old girl emasculation.
Maybe
that's
Eric
okay.
Left.
I spent
your
a
wife.
Lot of my youth being mistaken by strangers for a girl, which made no sense, because I didn't look like a girl.
It's your high cheekbones.
Well, I mean, I have a certain feminine sensuality that I think came out when I was a child. So
I can sense that you have a girl twin.
Yeah, that could be, and it rubbed off on me, yeah. So I might have a double X chromosome floating around in me somehow that I picked up in the womb.
Well, in middle school, one of my mother's work colleagues came up to her and suggested that I might have some kind of learning disability just from the way that I was acting. So
yeah.
I feel your pain, Elliot,
thank
for being
you.
Mistaken for things.
Yeah, it sucks. Dan, of course, everyone always knew what he was, just a dude, just some guy.
Just palling around.
With terrorists. Now, are they asking me what the most masculine thing I've done is?
Yeah.
I think it was
if
not
it wasn't that.
Not being attacked by a dog, but at a different point in that trip, firing a truck-mounted 50-caliber weapon, I think was probably the most
masculine.
Yeah,
and you stopped
thing.
An army of bad guys, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I just fired it into a big
of
pile of sand. and I did, unfortunately, because they don't do this anymore, I didn't
just
get to fire it from
Nazis.
The top of the truck. Yeah, I didn't get to kill any Nazis because they stopped doing that in like 1945. What's the deal?
Yeah.
They don't let you. They don't fire them from the top of the truck anymore because that leaves you too exposed. They have a joystick within the truck that fires it. But that was probably it.
Oh,
every
so
time
you got to hide inside a truck and play with a joystick?
Yeah, but every time
sounds
you fire
pretty
badass. It, the truck shakes. Okay, then it was when I shot one of the other types of guns I shot over there. That was when that was the trip where they said, okay, these guns, I think it was the either the M4 or the SCAR, which are two different types of weapons they have.
They both sound cool.
They said there's three settings. There's single shot. Then there's semi-automatic, which is a three-shot burst. Then there's automatic, which is an illegal setting in the States. You can only have that in a war zone. So you can set it to whatever you want. And all of us were like, automatic. Of course, that's what we want it to be set to. The one we can't do at home. And let me tell you, a lot of really hard to hold on to a gun that is in automatic mode. And I was so worried I would lose control and kill everybody.
And
that
you
I came
bouncing
with.
Around killing all the bad guys.
But there were no bad guys there. It was all good people, so...
Well, yeah, I've met some of the people you're on tour with.
I was worried it would be like a fire hose in a cartoon, and I would just lose control of it and fly into the air.
Then you'd put out the fire through accidental gun bursts.
Yeah, you'd shoot the fire.
No, we'd like shoot a fucking avalanche or something, and then snow would put out the fire. Who knows?
It was a real Dyatlov pass that we were in.
Okay, so this next letter goes thusly. Hey guys, I'm a big fan and first-time letter writer. I love you guys, and you're all equally my favorite. Whisper to Elliot, you're really my favorite.
Thank you.
I recently moved.
You should be made the boss of the Flophouse.
Oh, I'm already Dan's boss in one area. I don't need to be it in two. Dan, keep reading the letter. You're fired.
I recently moved and collected mini boxes from my parents' attic. Inside, I found two
mini boxes.
Manny,
like the boxes that like individual
like
cereal
faces.
Bowls.
Manny boxes.
Oh, like the He-Man character. Okay.
From my parents' attic. Inside, I found two copies of the original More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I know you all were traumatized by this book as kids, as was I, and I think the better for it. It will certainly help with my new job as priest in charge of a small parish in Long Island.
My new job as scarer in chief.
Sure. Well, as a local crazy man, driven insane by finding those books in an attic.
No, but... A priest in Long Island?
Well, maybe it won't, but I can stay up late at night under the sheets with a flashlight and scare myself. Anyway, my point, I'm willing to part with one copy of this masterpiece if any of you gents would like it, or perhaps another ill-defined contest would be in order, whatever you like. Or if you would like it, please send me an address. I promise not to stalk you. Keep on flopping. The Reverend Lauren, last name withheld. And I read this to say, please do not send this book to me.
Because it's going to frighten you?
Bury it in the yard.
Put it in the yard, and maybe an evil baby will grow out of that book.
Yeah, a real evil Timothy Green.
A scarecrow will come out.
Sure, a horrible pumpkin head. Yeah.
If we can make children out of horror books, then maybe we can make a pencil out of children. That's the scary life of Timothy Green. I think what you need to do, it's clear what you need to do with that book, which is give it to a child so they can be traumatized by it and grow up into a cool adult.
Yeah. Maybe become an illustrator themselves.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, buying magazines, cutting the eyes out of all the faces.
Sure.
Pasting them up in, I don't know, you might call it a dungeon. You might call it, who knows, a basement.
Maybe a dungeon full of evidence, let's
say. Sure, who knows.
This next letter is titled, Allie Larder is Obsessed. Dear Floppers, after hearing you discuss Obsessed,
I was curious. Long time ago.
Yeah. I was curious what Allie Larder's underwear in the car scene actually looked like. We discussed she had some mismatched lingerie.
I honestly don't even remember. Maybe I think she was wearing like water wings and like a tutu and maybe like an old fashioned strongman's leopard skin leotard.
Just everyone out there, Google Allie Larder lingerie and do it at work.
Okay.
But she headed to Google. When I clicked on one of the pictures, I was surprised to find out it was from an article on a style website that gave an in depth backstory to the ahem. Outfit.
Oh.
Here are some of the highlights. This is from the article. In one of the movie's hotter scenes,
bitchy title.
Larder's Lisa Sheridan surprises the object of her desire, played by Idris Elba, with the old nothing but silk and lace under the coat trick. Note, I love how they describe this as an old trick a la the popcorn trick mentioned in an earlier Flopcast.
It's probably what they were thinking when they said that.
Yeah.
Lieberman says Larder came up with the idea for
Joe Lieberman, the former senator?
Yeah.
They came up with the idea.
Yeah.
Lieberman
says Larder came up with the idea for the vintage-inspired ensemble herself. The lingerie was 100% Allie's idea, Lieberman said. She wanted to avoid anything stripper-inspired because she felt strongly that her character would pick something high fashion and sophisticated. I really love that Allie Larder was worried about whether her psycho stalker character might be seen as too slutty. Lieberman used two pieces from two different sets and dyed them to match. I also love that the floppers, fine eyes for lingerie, were 100% accurate in noticing that the underwear and bra were not a match set, despite a costume designer's best attempts to fool them.
I don't want to get into the details of why, but we have experience looking at ladies in lingerie.
The final look, classy, sexy, and surprisingly demure. A nice change, no doubt, for an actress who first made headlines wearing nothing but a whipped cream bikini in 1999's Varsity Blues.
She made headlines?
was that on the cover of the Times or something? And we got to put out an extra edition. Actress wears... extra edition. Extra. Read all about it. Actress wears whipped cream on boobs. Here, give me that paper, kid.
Martin Lathers boobs.
Holy jeez, it's just like he says, Shoeshine Boy. Take a look at this.
Oh no, I'm shot to death.
Awooga, awooga. Buddy, you going to get in the cab or not? Hold your horses. Where's the fire, buddy? Check out this paper. Then FDR gets on the radio. My fellow Americans, we've all seen the headlines. Allie Larder has whipped cream on her boobs. I have declared a state of emergency. All men are to turn in their erections right now.
We're assembling a crack team to lick the whipped cream off. She says, they did it, you guys. The psychotic stalker looked classy, sexy, and demure. And Idris Elba did not react like he smelled something bad at all. All the best, Anne Marie, last name withheld. So that was a pretty exciting piece of trivia.
Thanks for reminding us of a thing we saw.
Yeah, it was an old blast from the flop past on this podcast. And now for the last letter, I assume.
Yeah, if we weren't fooled by that lingerie, a ladies' man like Idris Elba, that guy's not going to be fooled.
No, come on. He'd be like, no, thank you. I'll just play my tiny accordion.
That's why he went back to Beyonce, you know?
Like he it makes no, this note makes this no sense lingerie. Why you would ever consider leaving Beyonce for Allie Larder. It don't even, if you're gonna have him plausibly tempted away from his wife, don't cast one of the most beautiful women in the world. Like, come
Maybe
on.
He's too intimidated by her.
He's afraid to approach his wife because he's afraid of rejection.
So,
my husband's never even talked to me because they're too intimidated by my beauty and my success.
Keeping with the theme, our final letter is titled Good Bad Boobs, Bad Bad Boobs, or Boobs You Kind of Like.
Okay, this episode took a turn.
It's real minefield.
It's from Trisha, last name withheld.
Oh, so it's cool because it's a girl, right?
Hey, OP.
Could be a man named Trisha.
What's flopping?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I think it's a girl, though.
I was hoping the subject line would get the attention of the number one pervazoid, who, rest assured, Dan, is my favorite flopper simply because he has the same last name as my boyfriend, Chris, last name withheld. Anyway, I just had two questions for y'all.
How can I put the clues together?
So first off, she said she's that Dan's her favorite flopper. Look, and she has a boyfriend, so her butt is on limits.
I read one that complimented Elliot. Come on. I was wondering if any of you had seen Nail Gun Massacre. It's a bad, bad movie that both of my parents are actually in. Hmm. And growing up, I thought I was the only person that had ever seen it. And other classics they produced, such as Reanimator Academy and Irving Peaks. Until years ago when I was in college and saw Nail Gun Massacre on video store shelves, and then the Alamo Drafthouse featured it as one of their Terror Tuesday films. So just sing if you knew it. If you don't, seriously, don't bother. I was aware that there was a movie with that title. I don't believe I've seen it. Stuart?
I haven't seen it.
I'm not familiar with it.
But congratulations on having Nail Gun Massacre parents.
And stumping us.
Yeah.
But number two, boobs. As a representative...
Yeah, that's usually how many there are.
As a representative of the Petite Ladies with Little Boobs Rotary Club...
Seems like a weird club.
I was wondering if you guys really are grossed out by skinny chicks with less to offer in the bosoms department. You praise Hots, the Great Bikini Off-Road Adventure, and the like, while eschewing such ladies as Allie Larder for their slight frames and less than blossoming bosoms. So come on, do smaller
is
boobs really
get... Is this an Allie Larder-themed mailbag?
Yeah, it's called Producing a Show Well, Elliot.
I don't know anything about that.
Do smaller boobs really get zero wormy boners? Love the Flophouse, regardless of your stance on bazoombas. Keep it up, dudes. Trisha, last name withheld. Now,
look, all men have their types. All men have their types, but that doesn't mean we're blind to other forms of female beauty. Right, yeah. Stuart?
Wait, what?
I think Stuart sure. might be blind to okay. non-giant boob female beauty. I have always been a proponent.
Giant boob is a bit of an exaggeration.
Okay.
I have always been a proponent that what is attractive is a proportional body, whatever
yeah,
the
yeah,
size.
Like
even if that
Greek.
Proportional body is a female gremlin body, Dan is up for it.
Dan is totally into it if the ears are gremlin proportioned to the rest of the body.
No, I'm quite fond of the smaller breasts as well as the larger breasts.
This is making me so uncomfortable.
I mean, we were asked directly.
We were, but you chose the letter.
Trust me, we get a lot of boring letters.
Look, let's just say when it comes to the floppers, we're all gentlemen, and it's the full package, both physical, mental, and spiritual, that attracts us to a woman. Except in Dan's case, it's often a wife's butt, and in Stuart's case, it's boobs.
And beer. If she brings beer and a pizza and holds them next to the boobs.
We all have very successful long-term relationships. Let's point this out. We're not monsters.
No, we're not monsters. But,
except for Stuart, who's a werewolf.
Yep. I was bitten by a magical gypsy who gave me lycanthropy.
I understand.
Do you like how I said lycanthropy weird?
Yeah, I did. But we were so distracted by it that it was a gypsy that bit you.
So the gypsy put a curse on his magical bite he gave me.
Wait, it was
me.
A dude gypsy.
He smeared... Yeah, so we were wrestling around. I thought we were just playing, and he took a big bite out of my leg.
A friend of yours?
And then he smeared wolf's bane in the bite, and that made me a werewolf.
Yeah, okay. It's
not really how it works.
I mean, I knew him for a couple of hours. We were having drinks. I met him at this bar, and then we started wrestling.
At this bar, Wolfies.
Yep.
Rest assured, and do not be afraid. All of us would find you attractive.
Yeah, well, we just don't want to, you know, let's not contribute to any body dysmorphia out there. Yeah. Everyone's beautiful.
Okay, so something positive came out of this experience.
Yeah, that was nice, yeah. Dan, that you're the most inspiring pervazoid there is.
But to move on.
Suffice to say, however you look, Dan, as long as you're find a way to objectify you as a sexual object.
Boy, howdy will I.
Anyway, so letters are over.
So next,
somebody shut up the mailbag. Throw that shit in the ocean next to my badge
and that big baby.
So, lastly, on this podcast, we make recommendations of movies that we've seen, usually recently, that we liked better than, say, Gangster Squad. Movies we think you should actually watch. Elliot, what do you have to plug?
I haven't seen anything lately that I
someone else
I haven't seen
who made the movie.
I haven't seen anything lately that I really loved, but I decided, hey, Gangster Squad, you know what that's about? Gangsters. So I'll recommend two gangster movies that I like a lot. I'll recommend a kind of classic 30s gangster movie and a later, you know, more modern gangster movie. So I'm going to recommend one, The Roaring Twenties, starring James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart, which is kind of a classic late 30s throwback to early 30s gangster movies, telling the story of one main gangster and a couple others through the Roaring Twenties and their rise and fall.
Is that a Raoul Walsh movie?
It is a Raoul Walsh movie, yes.
I think they're playing that actually at the Brooklyn Academy of Music as part of
they're doing a Raoul
Martin
Walsh
Scorsese,
series.
Raoul Walsh, yeah.
Because they're brothers.
Because Scorsese was so influenced by Raoul Walsh.
So if you're in the Brooklyn area and this hasn't already aired afterwards,
no, I think they'll miss it.
Then you know what? Just get a DVD because it's available. Yeah. But The Roaring Twenties, it's a great classic, snappy gangster movie with a tragic ending, as they all did back then. And then you know what? Go read Robert Warshaw's essay, "The Gangster is Tragic Hero." Why not? And the other movie I recommend is
Kung Fu Hustle.
Yeah, that Axe Gang was the top gangsters, is the movie The Friends of Eddie Coyle, directed by Peter Yates, 1973, one of Robert Mitchum's best movies, especially of his later movies. Peter Boyle's in it, too, and it's a picture of a time when gangsters were a lot less glamorous and a lot more gritty, and it's just another great movie about gangster betrayal and the tragedy that happens when your life gets mixed up with gangsterism.
Did you screen that, the 92Y, or?
No, I wanted to, but I think they did it another, either they did another time or we couldn't get a print of it.
Sure.
Because I really wanted to. It's a really good movie. I may have shown it once at my house.
Stuart, do you want to go or shall I?
Sure. I'm going to continue this theme of gangster movies and recommend Manhunter from 1986.
I don't know if I call it a gangster movie.
With the greatest gangster of all, gangster. Hannibal Lecter.
Lecter. Now, what makes Hannibal Lecter a gangster?
Well, he's played by popular Cockney actor, Brian Cox.
But he's not involved in organized crime in any way.
So
I don't think
I've been
RICO statutes would take him down.
No, you don't need him because he's killing people and eating them.
Spoiler alert.
It says that he doesn't do, he's already in jail when the movie starts.
Sure, and it rhymes with cannibal. I get it. So I've been doing some prep lately for a piece I'm doing for the upcoming I Love Bad Movies issue. And so I've been rewatching some of the Thomas Harris based Hannibal Lecter movies.
Like your favorite one, Red Dragon.
And Manhunter, which is based on the novel Red Dragon.
But
is
not
really
to make
great.
Fun of Manhunter in this I Love Bad
no,
Movies.
No, you like
No, I like
you're gonna make
I
fun
like
of what Hannibal Rising?
I'm making fun of Hannibal, the Ridley Scott movie.
Oh. Yeah. You mean the continuing adventures of Hannibal Lecter?
Yeah.
Brain Eaters. The story.
The adventures of Cannibal Man.
Hannibal the New Bad.
It is. I'm kind of surprised they didn't just keep going with movies where he became a superhero and it was eventually just like Popeye, but he eats people instead of spinach.
And coming up with food puns. So Manhunter, this was an early Michael Mann movie. It stars William Peterson.
From CIS? CSI? CSI.
Yeah, no, the Culinary Institute.
of science.
And everybody's favorite love interest, Tom Noonan.
Yep.
Playing a
Mr.
spoiler
Sex,
alert.
People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive 2002 Forever, Tom Noonan. Playing Buffalo Bill, right?
The dragon,
Tooth Fairy,
Francis Dollar.
Right. I got the non Hannibal Lecter serial killers and Thomas Harris movies mixed up.
And although it doesn't follow the original novel as closely as the later Brett Ratner directed Red Dragon,
it's a better movie.
Yeah, it's a much better movie. And what is it? Does it use Inigo de Vida?
Iron Butterfly.
They shot a scene with Tom Noonan where he had the big dragon tattoo on his back, and then they redid it with him wearing a shirt because they thought it looked too ridiculous.
Yeah, which is something that Brett Ratner would never do.
No, instead Brett Ratner has the villain, and maybe this is in the book, but I don't remember it because I don't remember the book that well. Go and find the original William Yeats drawing of William Blake. Ugh, I'm getting all over the place. William Blake drawing of the Red Dragon and eat it?
That happens in the
book. Does that happen in the book? It's such a weird move to have a real painting be eaten by your character in a story.
He kills art people.
Art eater. Manhunter, art eater.
Manhunter, colon, art eater.
So Manhunter, if you like Hannibal Lecter but want to see him played by Brian Cox.
My favorite part.
Or if you like Will
Agamemnon himself.
Agamemnon.
If you want to see Stryker from X-Men 2 in a jail cell. But I think if you want to see the therapist from Running with Scissors eating people, it's implied. What other Brian Cox roles are there that I can reference? I think my favorite part of that movie is the shot of Brian Cox sitting in his cell, impatiently waiting for a phone call. And it's like such a, like, by the time that Anthony Hopkins was playing Hannibal Lecter, he was too, like, invincible. But Brian Cox plays him as this, like, petulant jerk who is really childish, and I like that.
So I would like to recommend a movie that I watched video on demand.
Less emotion, Dan.
Okay.
Too much. You're really overwhelming everybody.
I would like to recommend the movie Grand Piano, starring Elijah Wood, the voice of John Cusack.
Frodo!
And weirdly, Alex Winter as a henchman.
I don't know what's so weird about that. He's a working actor.
Sure.
Even Alex Winter's got to eat.
Him. Yeah, come on.
You haven't seen him in a while.
Freaked 2 isn't coming out. He's got to get other work.
But it's a movie that when I saw the trailer, I'm like, what the fuck is this? How can they make this a movie? It's basically Phone Booth, except for instead of Kiefer Sutherland,
yeah.
Instead of Kiefer Sutherland keeping Colin Farrell in a phone booth, it's John Cusack has Elijah Wood in his sights, and Elijah Wood has to play this whole piano recital, this symphony recital, including playing this incredibly complex, unplayable piece without messing up any of the notes, or else he will be shot, and his wife will be shot in the opera box.
Now,
above
does
him.
He have is he have extra fingers like that pianist in Gattaca?
He does not.
That's going to make it more difficult.
But it is an absurd premise, but it is luckily matched by really melodramatic, amped up directing. Like it's a camera swooping around. There's like kind of a split screen effect at one point. It's very early Brian De Palma. And
like but, femme fatale.
Well, that's late Brian De Palma. Yeah. I mean, more like sisters.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is definitely in that Hitchcockian mode. There's something actually very classic about the way this...
Early Brian De Palma, you mean like, hi, Mom?
Yeah.
Like, greetings?
No, but there's something... Phantom of the Paradise. But there's something very...
Snake Eyes.
Classic later. Hitchcock about the feel of the movie. Because it's a stripped-down thriller about an ordinary guy other than him being a...
A grand pianist.
A grand pianist.
And it has nothing to do with a phone booth.
I don't know what, I mean, that was just a comparison Dan was making.
The final.
So he's not on the phone with the guy?
The final solution.
Yeah, well, how does he hear? He has like a thing in his ear?
He
has
an earpiece, yeah.
Okay.
The final solution for why.
Like a Bluetooth.
The final solution. Dan, that's offensive. I can't believe you'd support that.
The final revelation of why John Cusack
that's better.
Is doing this is pretty dumb, but
there's no not dumb reason for him to do it. The only not dumb reason would be maybe like his mother was killed by a piano,
yeah,
and now he's trying to torture a piano. I don't know.
I just had
no. Even that's stupid.
It's a very
maybe
fun,
he's just the best
movie.
Piano coach ever.
Yeah,
that could be it.
Well, there
is the Bela Karosi
of that
as
being like an explanation, like. He just wants to hear a beautiful piece played totally well, but it's just stupid fun. But it's a well put together thriller.
Stupid fun, says Dan McCoy.
Check your brain at the door, says Dan McCoy.
But keep the receipt because they won't give you your brain back without it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And somebody else is going to take your brain. It's going to be in the lost and found mm-hmm. box for like a month.
And
be like,
normal.
I thought it was my brain. And what are you talking about? I thought it was your brain. It doesn't even fit in your head.
Yep, exactly. Meanwhile, you're dead because your brain got taken out of your head. Why did you check your brain?
I don't know.
It's a Transformers.
I don't know anything anymore because my brain's gone. It's a Transformers?
Yeah, that's the type of movie you check your brain at the door for.
Yeah, no, that's true.
It's not a Transformers. It's a much better movie.
No, it's called Transformers 4 Grand Piano. The piano turns into a robot that saves him.
Yeah,
it blocks the bullet and then bites his hands off, just like in the movie
Gangster Squad.
Okay,
hat-headed hand herders, the movie.
All right,
well. Rated H for hats and hands.
And hurt.
Rated double H, triple H, hats, hands, and hurt.
All right, let's
John
endorsed
hurt.
By wrestler Triple H.
Yeah.
And by Preparation H. Let's close the door on this episode.
The only way to prepare a hat. Preparation H.
Smear Preparation H on it, then put it on your head, which is also an H.
That then put it on your butt, much like that dog that we talked about earlier.
Hey.
Best Flophouse callback ever.
Theoretical dog we've suggested. Or a hound if you want to use an H.
Another H. So many H's.
Too many stupid callbacks. Let's stop.
Now it belongs to the H's.
Okay. For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And I've been Heliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
H.
I had fun talking to Scott Tobias over Twitter today about Blood Rain. Because he wrote a piece about Blood Rain on, by the way, I think it's funny that the only Dissolve article I've talked to any of the writers
is about Blood Rain.
I just called him. I mentioned that he did not mention Billy Zane in his description. And I feel like it's an oversight.